We're finishing up our series this morning on being under the influence of the Christian path. So, a while back, I received this email, a wonderful email from someone at Nexus who said this. They said, "So I'm really enjoying Nexus Sunday mornings, though you haven't converted me just yet," which was brilliant. I loved it. Is that what Nexus is about, trying to convert people? Well, yes, actually. But what Nexus is trying to convert and call people to might really surprise you. So hang with me this morning. We have a bit of a hike to go on. Because as we conclude this part of our season and what it means to fall under the influence of the Christian path, I want to conclude with a teaching that seeks to answer three simple questions. Number one, why be Christian? Number two, why be part of Nexus? Number three, who is Nexus for? And what do we do with this whole evangelism thing? There's this whole strain within Christianity about sharing our faith, sort of recruiting other people. What do we do with that? And I love that the kids ended with "Go Tell It on the Mountain," because that's like the quintessential evangelistic song, right? Like, go tell it on the mountain. And so it carries with it the heart of the evangelistic tradition. There's something, a part of Christianity, that other people need to be told about. And so they ended with that song. I want to start with the classic evangelism passage in Scripture. This is Jesus' final address, his last words he sang to his disciples. This is how he ends his ministry with them. In Matthew 28, "Then Jesus came to them and said, 'All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always, to the very end of the age.'" Last week, we talked about how Jesus was a movement starter, a movement initiator. And one of the clearest pictures we have of that is right here. Jesus is sending the ones who have followed him out to make more followers. And this is what many people refer to as evangelism. And yet, let's be honest, today evangelism feels like a really bizarre thing, doesn't it? I see my dad's here. I'm glad he is, because a church we grew up in, their evangelistic method was bus ministry. Anyone have a bus ministry at their church growing up? No, here's what, okay, wonderful. What we did at the church I grew up in is every Sunday, we rented 12 school buses and then just drove through the city picking up random kids with the promise of a chocolate bar to come to church with us. And I still remember my dad got his bus license, and I remember he would drag me out. It was the worst in the winter months. We'd get out to the bus at like 7 a.m., scrape off the thing. It was freezing. Their buses take like a half an hour to warm up. And then we'd head out into the city and pick up children. And I had always wondered, what on earth possesses a parent to just be like, "Yeah, sure, go hop on the bus, just..." But you know what? I get it now. I'm looking for a bus ministry. Get on the bus. Like, take care of your kids all Sunday morning? That's the greatest thing ever. Oh, my. So that was what our church did. And there were hundreds of kids, 12 busfuls of kids we would bus in for the morning. And that was, hey, that's what we do. And it's awkward, right? Or we've run into street preachers, I'm sure, a couple times. And you're like, this evangelism thing is just so weird and awkward. And what I'm inclined to think is this: because many of us have seen evangelism done poorly, it's sort of become blacklisted. And the reality, I think, is this for a lot of people: the thought of evangelizing other people seems obnoxious, arrogant, manipulative, and condescending. To think that other people need to believe what we believe, I mean, it just strikes us as so arrogant, especially when we live in a time of religious pluralism. Do we really think the Christian religion is better or truer than someone else's religion or way of life? How could we possibly believe we have the corner on truth? How could we possibly think that someone else might need to believe what we do? These are the questions we sort of wrestle with. And I guess what I'd say this, ultimately what it boils down to for me is this: I don't know for certain if the Christian path is more true or better than other religions. I don't know for certain if Jesus is the only way or if other religions will lead someone to hell or if they're leading to the exact same place I'm going, an atheist is going. I have no clue. I have no idea. And my guess is this: no one does. No one knows for sure. I think we have to acknowledge the limitations of our knowing. Always approach faith with humility. I have no idea about so many other paths in life and where they're ultimately heading. To be a Christian is an act of faith. It's not a celebration of certainty. So I have no idea. And so I can anticipate you sort of saying, okay, so if you don't know, so why be Christian? Why be Christian then, Brad? For me, it boils down to this. Here's the thing that I am convinced of. We all need a path to follow in life. And we can't travel everyone in front of us. We have to choose one at some point. We all need a path to follow in life. We can't travel every path in front of us. We have to choose one at some point. This week, I took a trip out to Webster's Falls because I was trying to get some photos to show you. And Webster's Falls has changed over the years. I couldn't believe it. I went to Webster's Falls. If you're familiar, there's Webster's Falls, and then there's a path over to Two's Falls. And it's all blocked off, that path now, because it's some private property. Some person has a really beautiful house that overlooks the gorge, and now you can't travel from Webster's to Two's Falls. And it really annoyed me. They got this big fence set up, private property, stay out. I was like, ah, I don't think so. So I hopped the fence, naturally. And on my way down, because it's like this high, my pants got caught on the spiky thing, and I tore my pants. It was awful, but I was like, I'm going on this trail no matter what. Because what I was looking for is to get you pictures of an incident I had a number of years ago. I was out hiking at Webster's Falls, and you can see this is where I was perched a number of years ago. On the left there is a farther shot from Two's Falls. That one's a little bit closer. I'm out on this rock outpost, and I'm having this beautiful spiritual time out there. And I realized that right below me at Webster's Falls was the place that I had proposed to Kristen. When I proposed to her, I proposed where the river from Two's Falls and Webster's Falls meet. Huh? Where the two become one. Two become one. And that's where I had proposed to her. And so I'm standing up there, and I realize that right below me is where he proposed. And so I thought, I'm just going to hike down there. And this is what I was sort of looking at. You can't tell. I've inserted, for your reference point, cliff there. And it's hard to tell how steep it is. It's incredibly steep. I thought, oh, whatever, I can get down there. So I started hiking, and the gravel gave way. The ground gave way. I started sliding. And I'm grabbing onto trees, trying to hang on. But they're in such shallow dirt, they're all giving away. And I'm not even kidding, it was like right out of a movie. I slid over the cliff, grabbed one last tree, and it held. Oh, I wouldn't be with you today if I had fallen. It was unbelievable. I'm holding on to the cliff there, and then I had to somehow scale down the cliff. I had thought in my mind, it's going to take me half an hour to hike down by the path to where I had proposed to Kristen. Because I fell and got completely lost, it ended up taking me over 2 hours to find the place where I had proposed to her. You see, here's the thing that I realized that day. I needed a path. I was wondering aimlessly. I thought I could do it on my own. I thought I didn't need the help and guidance that a path was offering me, but I was wrong. I sort of arrogantly thought, I'm a good hiker. I can just sort of magically drift through the forest to my destination spot. And you see, the reality is what I really needed was a good, firm path. And my worry today is a bit this. It's not so much that people won't become Christians. It's my worry today that so many people, I think, just wander aimlessly through life without a path, without even really thinking or considering what their direction in life is. And I think we all have to wrestle with this question. What path are you following in life? What do you value? What is real? What does it mean to be human? What is needed to make this life, your life, this world, the best place it can be? And I think far too many of us, we just blindly head off into the woods without even considering the wisdom of following a path. Consider Jan Sumas, a researcher doing phenomenal, fascinating work. To get what Jan Sumas is doing, his research, imagine this. Imagine I drop you off in a large forest, and it's an overcast day. You cannot see the sun. So you can't see the sun. You have no external navigational cues. You're instructed to head east without the aid of a compass, a trail, or path. You've been left to navigate on your own. Now, honestly, how far east do you think you would make it? If I dropped you in the forest, no navigational cues, how far do you think you would make it? Anyone think they could navigate in the woods without navigational cues? Yeah, a few. Okay, interesting. This is the interesting thing. In wilderness lore, there's an old myth that people lost in the wilderness will wander around in circles. And some people have theorized in history it's because humans have one leg that's a little bit longer than the other. So over time, you sort of make your way in a circle. And so Jan Sumas wanted to try to figure out if it was true that people wander in circles. So researcher Jan, what he did is this. He's performed numerous experiments to measure how humans travel without navigational cues. So what he does is this. He ditches people into many different environments, sometimes the Sahara Desert, thick German forests. He does it on days when there's no sun, and then he straps a GPS device onto them and then just watches what they do. So here's the result of one experiment in Germany. So as you can see, one is a little different than the other. They were instructed to head east. SM was given navigational cues and allowed to follow paths if he found one. The others, RF, PS, KS, that, dropped off in a forest, told to head east. That's what it looked like. Wandering aimlessly. In fact, this is the fascinating thing. So Jan Sumas has done a lot of these experiments in a bunch of different terrains. This is what he has found. On average, people who are lost without external navigational cues will typically not travel farther than 100 meters from their starting point, regardless of how long they walk. So whether you walk 5 minutes or 5 hours, on average, of course there are outliers, you're not going any further than 100 meters from where you start. Fascinating, eh? And I would suggest that this is equally true on a spiritual level. There is wisdom in traveling on a path, because without a path, without navigational cues in life, we run the risk of spending our whole time walking in circles. So someone were to say to me, why be Christian? Well, because we all need a path in life. We all need a path to follow in life. We wander aimlessly without one. We don't get very far. And so what we're doing here at Nexus is this. We are calling people to a path. And again, I don't know for sure whether it's the best path or the only true path. I don't know. What I do know is that we all need a path. So at Nexus, to answer the question, why be Christian? Because we need a path. Everyone needs one. I like what Ernest Ingersoll says. A trail is a happy promise to the anxious heart that you are going somewhere and are not aimlessly wandering around in a circle. I stumbled upon perhaps my favorite book of the year recently, and now I'm going to buy a hard copy of it for myself as my prize for winning this morning, because I only have it on Kindle right now. But just a few weeks ago, I stumbled on this book. It's called On Trails by Robert Moore. And in it, he recounts his journey of traveling the full length of the Appalachian Trail, but that's just one part of the book. The rest of the book, he spends exploring the history and psychology of trails and paths. And so he studies the animal world, everything from ants to elephants, to see the psychology behind the way they form and follow paths. And this is what he says. In the animal kingdom, what trails and paths do is this. Trails function as a form of external memory, so animals follow them, trusting that the destination will be worthwhile. There's a fascinating story he tells about this from Botswana, a country in the southern regions of Africa. In the animal kingdom, of course, migratory paths are essential. Migratory paths exist to keep you alive. They lead to water. They lead to food. And so it's essential for the survival of animals to follow these paths. And prior to 1968 in Botswana, zebras had a migratory path right through the heart of Botswana. But in 1968, the government put up hundreds of miles of walls that cut off this migratory path. And it had a devastating effect on the zebra population. But here's the interesting thing. In 2004, the government tore down these walls, and the zebras resumed their migratory path. And this is astounding because that's a 36-year chunk of time, and on average, zebras live to be 12 years old. So that's three generations of zebras who had passed. And suddenly, when the path was clear, the zebras resumed following the migratory path. How? Leading theory is this: elephants. Elephants, who live much longer, remembered the ancient paths. And when the walls came down, they resumed that path, and the zebras began to follow them. I find it fascinating. You know, there's a passage in Jeremiah that I love because of its trail imagery. In Jeremiah, Israel is pictured as having tried to create their own path in the woods, and it's left them in danger. The nation is about to come under siege from Babylon, but they won't listen to God. They won't listen to Jeremiah, the prophet. They're dangerously wandering on their own. And so the counsel from God is this: return to the ancient path. This is what God says, Jeremiah 6. Stand at the crossroads and look. Ask for the ancient paths. Ask where the good way is and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. We all need a path to travel in life. At Nexus, it's the Christian path. A path is our way to survive and thrive in life. To follow a trail is to work from the wisdom of those who have come before us. It's to build on the knowledge of those who have come before us. Some of Robert Moore's words in his books have forever changed the way I see hiking trails and have also changed the way I see the Christian path. Here are a few excerpts. He says, "It is impossible to fully appreciate the value of a trail until you've been forced to walk through the wilderness without one. A path is a way of making sense of the world. There are infinite ways to cross a landscape. The options are overwhelming and pitfalls abound. The function of a path is to reduce this teeming chaos into an intelligible line. Complete freedom, it turned out, is not what a trail offers. Quite the opposite. A trail is a tactful reduction of options. On a trail, to walk is to follow. Like prostration or apprenticeship, trail walking both requires and instills a certain measure of humility. Both the religious path and the hiking path are made in the walking. Use creates trails. Long-lasting trails then must be of use. Oh, that's so brilliant. Keep that in mind and go hiking, and you'll be forever grateful. How many people have walked this trail before me, crafted this trail, this path, so that I could walk it? And it's the same to me with the Christian path, the wisdom of following a path in life. You might be thinking, whoa, but wait, what about other religions, other paths? How can I trust the Christian one is the best one? You can't. You can't travel every path. At some point, you have to choose one. What am I trying to convert you to here at Nexus? To following a path. And at Nexus, it's the Christian one. You might say, I'm not sure I like this path. I have some doubts about this path. It's confusing. And I would say, I agree. I like how Robert Moore, he sums up his frustration with following the Appalachian Trail. He says this: you skirt down a ridge only to climb it again. You climb a steep peak when there's an obvious road around it. You cross the same stream three times in the course of an hour for no apparent reason, soaking your feet in the process. You do these things because someone, somewhere, decided that's where the trail must go. Trail walking both requires and instills a certain measure of humility. Oh. Yeah. That's the nature of following the Christian path. You're like, this doesn't make sense. I know. It's frustrating. It's frustrating. But I love that reminder at the end. Trail walking both requires and instills a certain measure of humility. Why choose the Christian path? I have to choose one at some point. I don't know about you, but it is a very stressful thing for me at a restaurant to order off a menu. I just struggle because there's so many options. And it's like, if this meal is not the greatest thing ever, I'm going to be so disappointed. A lot of times what I'll do at restaurants is let somebody else order for me because I just cannot make up my mind. But you know what you call people like me at a restaurant? Annoying. Like, Brad, just make up your mind. Just pick something. It's the same in life. We can't have it all. You have to choose at some point, and we all will. Consciously or unconsciously, there comes a time. You have to choose. This is the path we'll choose to follow in life. For me, for us here, it's the Christian path. And from what I can see, it seems like a very, very good path. To me, it seems it's one of the best paths there's possibly to walk. And I know someone say, whoa, whoa, whoa. Objection, objection. What about John 14:6? What about Acts 4:12? Don't they say that Jesus is the only real, true path? Don't they say that Jesus is actually the only path? Well, actually, I think they say Jesus is the way and the only person whom salvation is found. But you see, when I read scripture these days, I not only see their language of truth, but I also see language of devotion. Jesus is the way, the only way. I confess that. Does that mean he's the only expression of the way? I don't know. Big question mark around that. But these statements from the earliest Christians were not just statements of their truth. It was also a statement of devotion. Devotion to something. It's the same way I say, Kristen is the only one for me. She's the only one. I'm completely devoted to her. Might I find someone else? Probably not. But she is the only one for me. And why do I say those sort of things? Because I should speak about Kristen in a language of devotion. So it is with Jesus. He's calling us to commit to his movement and path in life, and it's no good if once you're on the path, you're constantly looking for better options. And this is what we're about at Nexus. We don't know anything for sure, but we're devoted to something to believe that we believe to be the best of what we know of. At Nexus, it's commitment to the Christian path. I know some are thinking, that seems really wishy-washy. I'll be honest, it's the best I have. Because short of sort of making some sort of absolute claim that I know for certain this is absolute truth, I mean, I think this is the reality. And the interesting thing is this, there's a second part of this, though. Because more than just calling you to a path, we're also calling you to a certain traveling company while on the path. At Nexus, we're calling you to a path, but we're also calling you to travel and walk the trail with us in community. And I have to say, this is a great group of traveling companions we have amassed here. Chris and I were chatting about that just this week. I can't imagine a better group of people to travel through life with here than with all of you. And whenever Chris and I tell people about Nexus, one of the first things we mention is the company here is amazing. And I'm not just saying that. I truly believe this. In fact, this past summer, I was traveling in the U.S. with my friend Riley, and he just said, tell me about Nexus. So I began telling him in detail about Nexus, and at the end he said, you know, Brad, wow. What you have at Nexus there is something incredibly rare. He said so many pastors dream of what is going on at Nexus. What you have is a community that actually functions in an extended family sort of way. He said, you're lucky, Brad. I hope you realize that. You're lucky for the community you have. And I do. I do believe that. I'm incredibly grateful. He's right. This is exactly what Nexus is to me, is an extended family. And yes, like any extended family, we have some rather odd ducks here. We have some weird people. I'm looking around at a few of you. Yes, there's some odd folks here, but that's the nature of extended family. Everyone's got that weird Uncle Frank, right? And that happens here too, but it's an extended family community, and it's the rarest thing in the world to find an extended family beyond blood that will travel with you in life. And it's a beautiful thing. And so at Nexus, we're not just calling you to the Christian path, we're calling you to a specific community of travelers. Join us, walk with us, travel with us. So why be Christian? Because you need a path. Why choose Nexus? Because you need people to travel with, and this group of people here is pretty, pretty good. Some of you got that. Little Curb Your Enthusiasm there. But the answer to the evangelism question then becomes rather simple in my mind. Why recruit people? Because people need a path and they need a community. You know, I was reflecting on, it was just about a year ago that Paris had the terrorist attacks. And the rock band that was playing at the Bataclan that night were the Eagles of Death Metal. And interestingly enough, their music's actually not really death metal. But so they were playing on stage, and in the middle of the concert, terrorists in Paris broke in, started shooting, killed 90 people in the theater, the music hall, and injured 200. And the first interview I saw with Eagles of Death Metal after this incident was incredibly fascinating. First of all, they were completely, like, PTSD. They were shook up, like, really bad. But I still remember, I can't remember the lead singer's name. I remember something he said. It stuck with me for a whole year. He said, you know, this has changed our focus. Interview asked why. He said, we're now about recruiting people. What? He said, what we came to realize after that night is that there are competing visions in this world, some of hate, some of love. And he said, I feel like as a band, we've been wasting our time. Our mission now is we are recruiting people because the stakes are too high not to. I thought, fascinating. This isn't a Christian band. These are just people who saw firsthand that what the world needs is people committed to a path of love. And now they're like, that's what we're about. I'm interested to hear their new music when it comes out. Are we in the business of trying to evangelize people? Let's get one thing straight right away, okay? Everyone is an evangelist. What are you talking about? Do you realize the things you people here have tried to convert me to? Some of you have been successful. I was thinking of that this week. Like some of you have really strong political leanings, and you sound like evangelists. You really do. Or are vegetarian vegans here? Yeah. And you know what? It's worked. I actually eat less meat. You're converting me. It's coming. It's happening slowly. Or are cyclists here? You guys are nuts. Seriously. Oh, my goodness. The things I have tried at Nexus because people convert me to things. I've tried hot yoga. Yeah. Essential oils. I'm covered with them right now. I'm all in. Norwex. Don't tell me you Norwex people aren't evangelists, right? Poetry. Before Nexus, I was like, poetry. Oh, I've been converted. Poetry, oh my goodness, books, music. Every single day people are trying to convert me to something. Let's not pretend that evangelism is something that only a few crazy people on soapboxes do. We all do it all the time. Anytime you open your mouth and say, you really have to try this. Hello, evangelist. Tell me your good news. But here's the thing. Are we in the business of trying to convince people to join us? You know, I can't answer for everyone, but I'll tell you what, I am. Because I'm convinced people need a path, and I'm convinced people need a community. And notice, though, how that is very different than people need my truth because I'm right, I have absolute truth, people need to agree with exactly what I think. It's vastly different. It's two different things. What I or we are calling people is this, an ancient trusted path with Jesus as the trailblazer, the leader, the Lord of the movement, and a community to travel that path with. So who is Nexus for? Take a look at this passage, and then I'll try to summarize what I think Jesus is saying. He's speaking to the Pharisees here. He says, Jesus said to them, it is not the healthy who need the doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. Jesus speaking to the Pharisees, remember, he's being a little tongue-in-cheek here because he's essentially saying the Pharisees are the healthy ones. So I think he's being a bit sarcastic. But he seems to be saying, you know what, Pharisees, you seem to have life pretty much figured out. You seem pretty healthy there, Pharisees. You know what? My movement isn't for people like that. I'm looking for people who are sick, people who struggle in life. And the same, I would say, goes here at Nexus. We're looking for people to join us who don't have life figured out. And I think this is what Jesus is saying here. I have come to call the sick. I'm looking for those whose lives are difficult. If you have everything together, then you don't need what we're offering here. So if someone were to ask me, who is Nexus for? I think my comment would be this, trying to paraphrase, I think, what Jesus is saying. If when I say these three words, life is difficult, if that resonates with you, then I think you found the heart of what Jesus is talking about here. If you get that and feel life to be difficult, then at Nexus we have a path for you and we have a community of people to travel with. You see, if someone, an atheist, a Muslim, I don't care, whoever, if that person tells me, you know what, I'm very happy in life, Brad. Life is great for me. I'm fully contented. Everything's kind of figured out. Fair enough. What does Nexus have to offer you? But for the rest of us, for those of us who are the sick, the sinners, the ones who sense life as difficult, I think there's something here to offer you. And I know some of it, whenever life is difficult, some of us tend to think, well, my life isn't that difficult. A few years ago, I made a mistake here. Sarah Holmes, I don't know where she is, she was telling me, her and Aaron, they had just had Micah, and it was the Sunday after, and I was talking to Sarah about her delivery. I said, how did it go? She said, well, I was only in labor for an hour. And I said to her, oh, what a dream that must have been. Right? Yeah. Immediately, I could tell I had said something stupid. The look on her face was like, I'm going to kill you. You know, And I did say something stupid, because here's the thing. Just because I know people who've been in labor for 12 hours, 24 hours, 36 hours, I made the mistake of writing her own experience off as trivial, when for her, that hour was probably one of the worst of her life, right? And I think that so often is our tendency in life. We mistake other people's difficulties in life or even our own as trivial. But just because some in the world might experience life as incredibly difficult doesn't mean that we need to write our own off. And for so many of us, I think when we're really, really honest, the truth is this. We find life difficult. We find the terrain, the wilderness of life, hard to navigate. It's hard to figure out. And so I would say this. At Nexus, our message is simple. We have a path for you to follow, and we have a community of people for you to travel with. That's our calling. Life is difficult. It's hard to navigate for the vast majority of us, and so our calling is this. One, we believe everyone needs a path to follow. Two, we're calling people to a community of travelers. No one should walk alone. So let me close this morning, if I can, by extending the metaphor of the trail, the path thing, because sometimes I think it might be a little bit helpful to do that. And it might also be cheesy, but if you consider Nexus as a group of troubadours, travelers, walking a certain path, what does that mean for the rest of Nexus? So what is Sunday mornings? Here's what I'd say. A Sunday morning in terms of traveling the path community analogy, Sunday mornings here are really about exploring the path, trying to get a handle on what the path looks like, what we can expect of it, what in turn can be expected of us as travelers. It's our chance to check our maps, our compasses, our equipment, assess whether what we have what we need for traveling. Sundays are our times to sort of study the path, try to understand what's coming up ahead. What does the path look like? What does it feel like? Boomerang groups, pub theology, what are those about? I sort of see them as sort of like campfire chats. Those moments you rest along the trail, you camp with others, you're sitting around the campfires and you're just sharing what muscles are aching. Where are your bruises? How do you feel about traveling? Are you excited? Are you weary? Do you want to quit? Or do you wish you were further ahead? What is Chipsmas about? Nothing. It has nothing to do with any of this. I just wanted to put in another plug because what kind of human doesn't like chips? But, so Chipsmas had nothing to do with any of this. But what does it mean for you to be part of our traveling company? Here's what I would say. This past summer, I was out camping in national parks, and I was amazed by what I would call the sharing economy of camping. And it's amazing the way communities rally. And so Riley and I had rented a tent. We didn't own this tent. We rented a tent. And our first night camping, there were the two of us setting up. And we got in early. We thought we had plenty of time. But so help me, we could not figure out how to set up this tent. And I am not exaggerating. The two of us for 2 hours, try to figure this out. And by this time, we were arguing with each other, like, Riley, you're an idiot. Just, no, it goes this way. And he, no. And we were just getting into it. And then suddenly, you could see the community of campers. Hey, you need some help there? Yes, I need some help here. And the thing was, there was no instructions with this tent we had rented. By the end, there were 13 people from the campsite. Hey, how does this thing work? Finally, we got it up well after dark, but I was like, wow, what an amazing community that people just sensed we were struggling and said, hey, can we help? When I was camping outside Monument Valley, it started to rain, and instinctively someone came over, a traveler, and said, hey, it looks like you need a tarp. Can I set it up for you? Oh, yes, beautiful. And what you realize is that when you're hiking or camping with others, a tremendous sharing economy pops up. There always seems to be the spirit of, how can I help? Or how can I chip in, make your life a little easier as you travel? I was thinking even this summer, Nexus went for a camping trip, and we got kicked out. That's a whole other story, but we all went camping. And we got ourselves in a little trouble. But it was amazing, the Nexus camping trip to me was like a big metaphor for what Nexus is, because everybody chipped in and helped out in certain ways. Some people had important gear that made life easier for everyone. Someone brought a slack line. Other people brought funny stories to share around the campfire. Some people brought delicious treats. Bronson brought some whiskey in his car, which was great and also not great, but it was this sham. Everyone just sort of, hey, it looks like you need this. It looks like you need this. I got a funny story. I'll start the fire. I've got some incredible, delicious treats. And everyone just sort of instinctively comes together. And so my closing question is this to us. If you choose to journey with us here at Nexus on the Christian path, if you choose to travel with us, what are you bringing to help the community? What do you bring to the table? And you know, sometimes it's simply somebody being able to look around and go, I sense that person needs something, and it might only be a note of encouragement. It's kind of like camping. Sometimes campers, they just have this sense for when other people need something. Maybe it's just you look around and you go, I think that person might need something. Or sometimes it's something simple. Brian, up there doing the slides, saw a need and said, Brad, it looks like you're struggling Sunday mornings trying to do this. And thank you, Brian. For the others of us, it's, you know what? We got a lot of kids here. We need help. And I'm in a season of life. I can help with that. Let me hop in. For some of you, we have an amazing care ministry here, and it's unbelievable when people are sick. There are people here who say, hey, I can bake. That's what I do. I can make meals for people. Our artistic people here, bringing their artistic talents to the table. For some of us, it's you have money, and you give your money here generously. For some of us, not me, but some of us are really organized. And you say, hey, I can help kind of organize this band of people wandering on a path together. Some people, it's helping out behind the scenes with our finances or doing leading groups, whatever it is. But I would say what we're trying to cultivate here at Nexus is this, that sort of spirit, that camping community that you just sort of look around and go, what's needed? Where can I help? How can I be an encouragement? So to conclude this part of our fall, we still have 2 Sundays left till Christmas, but this whole year has been considering the things that we're under the influence of, and this part has been about being under the influence of the Christian path. This Sunday is, what does it mean to come under the influence of Nexus? And I would say what it means is this. It means being willing to travel the Christian path with us. It means being willing to travel in this company of travelers. It means being willing to bring the things you have to the table to help us as we travel on together.